This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Fay. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I understand that you had a recent trip that was wonderful.
I did. Went to the land of Southern California recently, and I will tell you the average temperature was around 75. And so then I came back here, and I see maybe by Monday it might be around 108, 110.
How do you think people will be dressing? Will they be dressing or not?
I think they won't be.
Oh, my gosh. They may have their bathing suits on at work.
Exactly. We may have to wear a suit made out of ice.
Oh, that sounds great, because I'm going to tell you, 110, I don't know if you can survive. I'm not sure.
I mean, that's pretty dangerous. You know, they say that the average date for the last day of triple-digit temperatures is around August 19th. And so that has obviously come and gone. And so I was thinking, well, you know, maybe, you know, we'll get into the 90s at least. You know, it's not much difference between 100 and, like, 98, but still, at least it's a little bit of progress. However, now, you know, it's obviously well past the 19th, and we're going up into the triple digits, probably one of the hottest days this summer so far.
Is on the way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I just don't know if I can go out or not.
I know it. You may have to
stay. I don't have a hat. Do you have a hat?
No, but I got a lot of sunscreen, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'm telling you, we're going to need a hat to put on our head to keep it from just cooking.
Oh, yeah.
And we see these people with hats, but I think I better get one.
Yeah. Yeah. You may need to go, and you should probably build in some kind of an ice pack in the top of it.
I like that. How about a fan?
There you go. That's perfect.
I saw somebody with a fan in their hat.
Really?
Yes.
Well.
And I think that would be a good idea.
That's rather genius right there.
I think it was a fishing hat or something.
Oh, yeah. Now, that would be good.
Yeah, I think it was from one of those sports deals. And
yeah.
I saw the little fan.
Yeah.
And I may have to go that far,
yeah,
or I'm going to have to just run into the building.
Yeah, either
jump
that or
out
just
of the car, run straight in the building.
Just don't go outside at all. Just stay inside.
That's it. I'm not going outside. I don't think I can afford to.
And then
my little head will burn.
Exactly. And then the other thing that happens is when it gets that hot, you know, everybody's got the air cranking, and it really taxes the power grid, and so there's a chance. You never know. I mean, it may not. But, you know, anytime it's that hot, there's a chance that it could we could have some blackouts, and there could be some power outages because there's such a strain on all the power. And so you never know. You have to watch out for that as well.
Are you talking about Texas?
Yes.
Have a blackout?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm not ready for that.
I remember a couple summers ago, it was so hot. And this was even late. This was especially late afternoon, early evening. There were several power outages. Encore was reporting the power was out in several locations because there were so many people, you know, trying to use the air and use, you know, all this power. And it was taking so much to cool things down that there were some outages.
And they were turning it way down in the 60s, which we're not supposed to do.
Yeah, yeah. That makes it even worse.
Wow. Well, the next few days will be an interesting time for us Texans.
Yeah.
We'll see how tough we really are.
Hopefully, well, that won't happen and we won't have to prove how tough we are, but yeah, you never know.
I hope you're wrong. And that we'll have no power outages, and we'll come swimmingly along.
I know. But, if I've predicted that now or made it happen or jinxed it, it is all my fault. Now that I've said
that's right, and everybody's going to not like you. And the other thing, everybody's better buy some extra ice, and that we can put our feet in the ice deal if we have to.
Oh, yeah, have a little foot ice bath.
That's right.
Well, that's
so
a good
if it
idea.
Gets really bad, just get you some ice, put it in your ice cooler.
Or here's one final suggestion, and I'm pretty sure you'll agree with this one. We all go to the store and get extra ice cream because that'll cool us down.
It would, and I was just afraid if the electricity went out, ice cream might melt.
Not if you eat it first.
Okay, well, we'll get right on that problem. I don't want to have that problem. We'll get on it.
It's a matter of our own health. We must go get ice cream.
I agree. And should we get all the flavors?
Oh, yes, definitely. You don't want to favor one over another.
That's right. We'll get every flavor. This is an emergency broadcast.
Oh, that's funny. I like how you prepare for heat waves.
Well, you got to do what you got to do. Yeah.
It's Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
So this is all about growing your money so that you can retire happy, wealthy, and early if you want to. I know a lot of people don't want to retire early, and that is not a reason to just, you know, say, well, this doesn't really apply to me. This applies to every single person who does any kind of planning or wishing or desires to at some point retire and live a good life. Because I know a lot of people think, well, you know, when I retire, I'll have the house paid off, I'll have the car paid off, so my expenses will be reduced, so I can probably make it on less. What do you say to that person who thinks that?
Don't think it's going to happen that way. You know, I have not seen anything going down. You know, we're not living like we did in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Things are going up all the time. You know, I know we're in the digital age, but things cost a lot more. You can't say, well, now I'm going to get everything paid off and we're going to live on $30,000 or $50,000. Your lifestyle isn't going to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, your wife isn't going to do without the beauty shop. She's still going to shop every week. She's still going to spend the money that she's always spent. So you might as well just get ready and say, well, this is how much we're going to have.
Yeah.
And we want to retire early. But a lot of people aren't. But then I do have quite a few people that are retiring at 59 and 60 because they've always worked for one company, and they want out. They don't want to work for them anymore. They're tired.
Yeah.
The ones that are going to go and work is the ones that have changed jobs several times. They're happy. They like what they do.
So what about expectations? Because I know one of the things that always comes up when it comes to retirement planning is the expectations of retirement. And I know people say, yeah, I'll have things paid off. My expenses will go down. You say that's not a good idea because you still have all the things that you need to do. So what should people expect? Because anybody who hasn't actually sat down with pen and paper or sat down with you and talked about it, how much money do we actually need? What are we going to use each year? What are we going to pay bills on? How are we going to, you know, grow our money and still have some kind of money coming in? What would your expectation, how would you set that in a realistic tone for somebody who's starting now to think about retirement?
Okay, I would say, okay, how much, what percentage do we want to take out of our retirement? And these gurus that say take 4%, I don't know if any of you can live on 4%. I don't think I could.
Yeah.
If they said today, we can only take 4% out of our retirement, people would be hustling, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Because people are taking more than that, let me just tell you.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to take, I figure, about 9 to 10% a year out, okay?
All right.
And so they've got to be making, you know, 8%, 6%, you know, where there's very little difference, where they won't get into their principal. And I know people that are making enough right now, they could go ahead and retire. But they're not going to. They're going to keep going and keep their interest going, you know, even after they retire. But they're not going to retire for another 5 to 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll keep the money right where it is and just keep going. And that's a good idea. But every man, when he retires, they get all these ideas. They've never ranched in their life. They've never had a farm. And they decide, I'll buy a little ranch. Good Lord. Good Lord. And the first thing you know, oh, yeah, I've leased it out to this guy. I've got somebody else running it. They're not really going to ranch. It's a figment.
they're nothing more than like a renter.
Yes.
Who's renting a ranch.
That's right. And I have a fella in New Mexico. He got him a great big ranch. But he's got a guy on the ranch that's doing most of the work. Now, he's going out for Roundup, a little branding and all this. But he does not live on the ranch. He's not working it every day. So, you know, you can be a gentleman rancher is what I'm saying.
Gentleman rancher. Nice.
And then I know people that say, I'm just going to go to the lake and fish every day or go to the golf course. Now, that's the ideal man.
Mm-hmm.
The man that's just going to the golf course, going fishing every day. It's something that's not going to cost a lot of money, you know?
Yeah.
The ranch is going to cost you a lot. The farm is going to cost a lot. Cattle cost a lot. And you have to go see about them. Why not just have a good time?
Yeah. It can be kind of an expensive hobby, especially if you're not even going to live on it, you know?
No, you're not going to live it. I don't have anybody living on the ranch that I know of. And I've got a lot of people that have ranches. I've got people that have had them for years, and their attitude's a little different than the guy that says, oh, I want to buy a ranch or a little farm now that I've retired. What it is that they're bored in 2 years. All men get bored. I don't care who they are. They're not going to go home and sit down with the wife. That is the last thing on their mind.
Yeah.
They need to get out of the house. They need to go play golf, go have coffee with their friends. Or go to like, folks.
Yeah. Well, they're used to being busy for so many years, places to go, things to do, people to see, and then all of a sudden you retire and people don't have any of those obligations, and then they get stir-crazy and don't know what to do.
And the ones that move out of Midland are doing better, I'll just tell you. I have a lot of clients that have moved from Midland. They've went to East Texas. They've went to South Texas. They've retired on all of our different lakes, and they're having a good time. And they're not having as bad a time as people who stay right in Midland where they've always lived, and there's nothing for them to do. We don't have a lake around here, you know. There's just not a lot of things to do in Midland, Texas, and we don't have water that's good. So a lot of them are retiring in other places.
So when somebody's planning these things, should they go ahead and say, okay, I want to move to this location, or yes, I want to go ahead and maybe get a hobby farm, or you know, they want to get a ranch, or should they look at those things and factor those types of expenses into their retirement ahead of time? Like maybe research, what are the costs? What are the, you know, how much am I going to need to do this? Or should they just, you know, stay consistent with growing of the money, the investments, and things like that, and then work with whatever they've got?
I think that's what they're going to have to do, because we don't know if they're going to change their mind. If they're saying, I want to buy a ranch, and I'm serious. Okay, that fellow will probably do it. But a lot of them say, I don't know what I want to do. You know, I want to retire and take some time off and have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do that, then 2 years from now, they'll be back in the office saying, I think I want to do this, or I want to do that. And some of them even come back and say, hey, I'm going to work part-time. And that's a good idea. There's nothing wrong with working part-time, enough to keep you busy and out of your wife's hair. I mean, you know, she doesn't want you at home, folks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then a lot of people spend a lot of time with their grandchildren. They take them on all kinds of trips for at least 2 years. You know, they're going to take them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to take them to Disneyland. They're going to go everywhere. That's a good thing.
Yeah, do some traveling, see some things,
yeah.
You know, spend some time with family and things like that. Yeah, it's and you say they do it for an on average about 2 years, right? And then
2 years is about the limit. Then they're tired. They say, you know, we've been everywhere. Let's stay home for a while.
Yeah.
And then they get bored. But as long as they're traveling, they're not bored, and they're having a good time. And it's something they've never done. They've worked every day of their life.
Yeah.
So they never could go out and have any fun.
So it's
a good thing.
So when people are looking at this, and they're saying, okay, these are the things I want to do. I know I need to grow my money. I know I need to invest. I know I need to, you know, plan for these things. I don't want to just hit retirement and then just say, golly, I hope I've got enough and just wing it and see what happens. You've got to be smart about it. And so whatever people choose to do, it doesn't matter what the plan is. Either way, they've got to get on it. And so when people are looking at investments and they're saying, okay, you know, I've been in the stock market for a number of years. I'm looking at, you know, what's been going on, you know, for the last several months. It's been up and then it's been down and it's been up and then down. And then, I mean, we saw what happened, you know, late this week. I think it was yesterday morning. You know, the Dow drops, you know, 400 points. And then, you know,
I know. It's like, and I can't figure out why it's dropping. Can you?
So how do people possibly plan for retirement when, you know, in before lunch, everything could be gone at any moment?
I don't know. I mean, the last 2 or 3 weeks, it's dropped so fast. You know, one day it dropped 800 points.
Yeah.
I just couldn't talk. I go, what the heck? And I go, how much have they lost today?
Yeah.
And they said, one billionaire lost $3 billion.
Wow.
And I don't care. In dollars and cents, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. And I don't know of anybody who, I mean, yes, you know, people plan for investments by saying, okay, what can I afford to lose? And you know, you say that all the time. That's really a fair assessment of, you know, how much do I invest or what do I do? How do we move forward? What's the plan? But I don't know anybody that is really actually, when it comes down to it, okay with losing money. So people are looking for other alternatives. And so when it comes to investing, maybe smarter, as some people might say, or at least a little bit more conservative, as others might say, you know, especially as you get closer to retirement, you don't want to have that big risk. You don't want to, you know, potentially lose half of your wealth, you know, a year or 6 months before retirement. So that's why you've got this investment opportunity with Life Settlements. And this is where people can come in and they can invest in a life insurance policy. So how does that basically differ from Wall Street?
Well, I think it differs quite a bit because it doesn't have the up and down. Now, it has other risks, but it doesn't have the risk of losing, you know, half of it every day or a fourth or three-fourths. The biggest risk is if this goes over. It costs you money. But it's not the risk like you're going to lose your money. It's a different type of risk. It's the risk that your investment is safe because it's in a life insurance policy, but it may go over the time allotment. We may have told you 24 months. It may go 32. So that is your biggest risk, is it may go over and you're going to have to pay some premium. This week we did 3 policies, each one $1 million, and the premium was less than 1%.
Really?
Less than 1%.
Wow, now that's
so
impressive.
So those are really good times. And we can bring them a premium less than 1%. If it goes over, they won't even notice it. I mean, it's so small.
Yeah.
So that's a great thing to have happen. So even though it's a risk, and we're not going to tell you it's not, it is, it's a risk you can live with very easily. And it's different than the stock market because any little thing sets it off. It doesn't matter. It's not going to set anything off on a life insurance policy. It doesn't have any moving parts like the stock market. And that's what I like about it.
So it doesn't matter if it's you know, if anything happens with China, or you know, if Russia, you know, does something, or if something happens in Afghanistan, it doesn't matter what happens anywhere on Earth. The value of a life settlement is never going to go. Nobody will ever wake up the next day and say, "Oh my goodness, China's market crashed. That means I have nothing left in this life settlement." That's never going to happen.
No. Because it's just simply a life policy. It's a contract. It's a simple contract between you and the life insurance company. It says, you know, you own a piece of that life insurance policy, and when that person passes away, we get the money for the client. That's what it amounts to. And the bank acts as trustee, so the money goes to the bank, and then the bank pays it out. So, you know, it's about as simple as you can be, a way to make money. And this week we did, I think, $3 million, and people were saying, okay, how serious is this person? Well, you know, if it's $1 million, we have more than one opinion on it, and we always do, and that's part of it. We need, you know, more than one opinion, you know, if it's $1 million. We want to see what everybody thinks. Is this person really that sick? Is it stage 4? You know, is it a 30-month, 35, or, you know, is it 12 months? We need to know.
Mm-hmm. So when people are looking at these policies, they know everything about the policyholder. They know the type of cancer. Well, we should probably actually back up a minute, because these policies that you're bidding on and in most cases buying, you're only looking at stage four cancer. So anybody who's got even stage two cancer, somebody who's just elderly and wants to travel and sell their life insurance for some extra money, those are not the policies you're going after. You are specifically buying stage four cancer policies. And so I know there's a specific reason for that. What is it?
That's exactly right. You know, we're just trying to get the ones that we know will be short. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have stage four, it might be long, you know. And I know different people buy different policies. They'll buy something that's 5 or 7 years. But those are mutual fund companies, and we don't do that. Mutual fund companies have a different scenario on their investments. You know, they're doing a different thing than we're doing. And we're not looking for a 7-year. We're not looking for 5 years. You know, we're looking for what we consider fairly short turnaround. And either they've had cancer and it's returned, or the first time and it's spread everywhere, and that's going to get them. That's what we're looking for.
Okay. And the reason is because, you know, obviously as people, we hope that people, you know, can survive and beat cancer and all that. However, the statistics are there. The metrics for years and years and years strongly support the fact that people who are diagnosed with stage four cancer, it is terminal. And so, you know, yes, there are, you know, these companies are working on, you know, potential cures and drugs and treatments for stage four cancer, but they're just not there yet. And so we know that these policies are going to mature. And so these are the ones that have the fastest turnaround rate. Am I saying that the right way?
That's exactly right. In other words, we're trying to buy the ones that have the biggest risk of no return.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to buy the ones that the statistics tell us they can't survive because it's spread. If it hadn't spread, they might survive several years. But when it's spread and it's in bone and your skeleton, it's really hard to survive.
Okay, and so this is good for the policy holder, because stage four cancer is very expensive to try to treat, and so a lot of times they need a lump sum of money in a hurry, and so they need to sell their policy. That's where you come in. You buy it, and then they get their lump sum of money, and they can go do whatever treatments are necessary to hopefully try to beat stage four cancer. Although we know that it is fatal, they just try to extend life as much as possible.
What I read is, how many cancer drugs are they taking? Have they had radiation and chemo? Did they pass on chemo? Did they pass on this? Did they go to Tijuana? Did they go to Mexico? And they believe that's going to work. If they've went to Mexico, we're bidding hard on it, because I know and you know that alternative is not working real well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just not working.
All that does is it allows the cancer to spread and get more aggressive.
It does get aggressive, because when we go back and they've already been to Mexico, and I start reading it, it says they went back to the doctor, and the doctor said, look, we'll try to give you enough drugs to keep you comfortable, but it has spread too far now. In that 3-month period, it has become very aggressive in your body.
Yeah. It's brutal.
It is brutal. It's terrible. Sometimes the chemo is worse than the cancer.
Yeah. Oh, they say that all the time. They say.
Yeah.
They say oftentimes, yeah, the treatment is worse on the body and harsher on really people's emotional state as well than the actual cancer itself. So they need to sell their policy. You come in, you buy it. Well, you know, what is the average? And I know it kind of changes with the type of cancer and the person and, you know, their health condition to start with. But what is an average, would you say, for somebody diagnosed with stage four cancers with a number of these policies that you buy? What average time frame do they usually mature?
It's usually 22 to 24 months.
Okay.
Now, we have a lot of them that are, you know, 12 months, 18 months, but sometimes a 12-month will come in 6 months, or it'll go over.
Mm-hmm.
It'll come in 18-month. Those really short ones, you can't tell. They can go either way. You know, this spring, we had two that lasted 2 months.
Oh, boy.
But yet, we've had others, 12-month ones, that went to 18. They lived longer than they thought. So it's hard to predict a really short-term policy. You know they're terminal. You know it's going to be fairly quick. But sometimes they miss it, and you know they say, "Oh, this person's going to live 12 months." They don't even live 6.
Yeah.
And we've had them not live but 2. And then it'll turn around the other way. One they just swear is going to come in 12, and they last several months over that. And so you don't know for sure.
Yeah.
That's the big mystery about this.
Well, stage 4 cancer, it's a brutal diagnosis, and bottom line is no matter, you know, if it takes 12 or 18 or whatever, most of these, it's pretty quick. And so that's what makes this a good investment for investors. Now, obviously, once the policyholder gets their money, they're essentially out of the picture at that point. And so then how does that turn into an investment opportunity for people?
Well, then we send out an invitation to our people and say, okay, this morning we're fixing to fill this policy. Do you want to participate? And we send them out the life expectancy, tell them to read it, and then let us know. So it's just that simple. They make the call. They tell us if they want in or don't want in on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like these three this week. I had one guy sent us a little message after he got it. He said, well, I don't see the severity of it. I had to go back and mark it up and show him where it had went to the spine and where it had went to the pelvic. So there was cancer in the pelvic and the spine, and they'd missed that. They started out with breast cancer, but then it had spread to these other two places. And when it goes to the bone, I don't know anybody that's going to survive bone cancer.
Yeah, I don't know that I've heard of anybody who has either, because it's into the core of the body, and that's
if it gets in your bone, I'm telling you, I think you're gone.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, we've studied this and studied it, and you know which ones are going to come in first. Of course, we always say pancreatic cancer because you know if they can't operate, which they can't lots of times, then it's 9 months. Mm-hmm. If they can, you're going to live 2 years.
So this person who was looking at the policy and they missed a few of these things and they were, you know, questioning how severe it was, had they been with you for a while, or are they a fairly new investor?
No, they're fairly new. They've been there a year is all.
Oh, okay.
And so they haven't got used to really studying the life expectancy. They browsed over it, but they didn't go to that second page and study real hard where they said, you know, the breast cancer, they've operated on it. But then, you know, they didn't get it all. They never do. And then it had spread to the pelvic area and to the bone. So there's now cancer of the bone and the pelvic. And so you know it's spread. It's going to keep spreading. You're not going to be able to stop it once it started spreading.
Yeah.
And they missed that part about there's two other places that there is cancer.
Okay. And this kind of leans towards, you know, behavior of different types of investors. I know some investors that have been with you for a while and they've been through several policies, they don't necessarily, you know, examine the policies anymore because they know how the program works. They know that, you know, if it's an investment that you've bid on, you've already gone through it a million times with a fine-tooth comb. You know that the policy is a good policy. They can always look at it if they want to. Obviously, it's all there at any time, but they know the process. They know the system. For new investors, though, who aren't used to it, they tend to examine these with a little bit more detail. Is that a fair analogy?
Yes, but a lot of times they don't know what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to know what they're looking for. But like one of the clients here, she's been with me a long time. She called the office and said, "What does Faye say?" I mean, that's what she said. What does Faye say about the policy?
Mm.
And then, if Faye likes it, I'm in.
Yeah, and most people know that you've already gone through these things, and so when you send out an email or a call or however you notify people, and they've been with you for a number of years, and you say, "Hey, we've got this policy," do most of them even look at it really anymore? Or just say, "Yep, put me in."
Most of the time, they just say, if she says yes, we're in.
Okay. And the reason is because they've spent years up till that point making money. And so, you know, I know you have a number of, you know, investors who have been with you for a long time, several years. How does the process work as far as long-term investments go? Once somebody is in and they have a couple policies under their belt, what's the long-term picture look like as far as being in the program?
Well, usually they want to have 5 or 6 or 8 policies working all the time, because there's going to be some of them that are going to go over, so they have to wait on their money on those, and they've got some coming in early. So every time one comes in, they say, okay, I want to reinvest. I want to do this. I had one guy didn't invest for a couple of months, and so I said, I don't know. You know, he's just keeping his money in cash. We got a call from him this week. I'm back in.
Really?
So you don't know what people think. Huh. You don't know how their thinking is, you know?
So when people come to you for the first time, what kind of documentation do they look at? Because this is a very well-informed type of investment. I know people, you know, they know what they're going to make. They know, you know, if it goes over, what they're going to pay in premiums. They know all about the policyholder. They know the treatments. They know the treatments they didn't take. So what kinds of information does a new investor go over with you? What kinds of things do you show them?
Well, I show them, you know, how a policy works, what a spreadsheet looks like. You know, if you go in certain policy, here's the way it'll look. It'll show what the premium is. It'll show how much you invested. It'll show what your return is, what the percent is, how many months it is at the bottom of the page. And this is what goes to Bank Nevada Trust at the bank.
Okay.
And so they have this. So when this policy matures, they know how much to put in your account. They know how to put how much you put in their base account. They have a copy of the spreadsheet just like we have it.
So the payment process is already mapped out before the policy is even, I guess, essentially all the way filled. Is that?
That's right. As we fill it, then we make out this spreadsheet and say, okay, we've got Joe in it, Matilda, you know, 10 people in it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what each one's going to make. That's what they've got in it. Here's what their premium is. Everything is right there in black and white.
So when the policy matures, the payment process is already mapped out. It's very simple, very easy, very streamlined. It's just a matter of boom, 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 boom.
That's right. The bank is the one that gets a certified death certificate. They're the one that puts the money in your account. We never touch your money. And then the bank puts the money in each account, and it's done.
Okay. All right, so people don't have to. What would be an average amount of time once a policy does mature? How long does an average person wait for it to be in their account?
Usually it's 6 to 8 weeks.
Ooh.
Now, we've got one right now that's taking a little longer. She died in the Philippines.
Uh-oh, so you got some red tape.
Oh, we've had a lot of red tape, and it's almost through. We're fixing to pay on it. But it was a tough deal. When we bought it, they assured us they had a cousin here in the States that would take care of all this. And it's just been tough. Mm. We've got the certified death certificate. The cousin, you know, got us that. But we have to have something from the American consulate in the Philippines.
Oh, boy.
So I think we've now got that and can pay out on it. So, you know, usually we don't do anything outside the country. But sometimes people will move outside the country.
Mm.
And when you do it, you don't always know that if they were born somewhere else, that they may decide to go back there.
Yeah.
So this is the only one we've ever had that this happened on.
But it's not any big deal. It's just it may take a little longer to get the proper paperwork.
That's
but
right.
There's
yeah.
no other, you know, downside
and,
to it.
And they'll get a little extra money on it, so it's going to work out.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to get that extra money because it took longer.
Yeah. All right, this
so
is your money.
So they'll be happy.
Exactly. Any chance to get a little extra money makes people happy.
That's right.
This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, and you always bring interesting, fun things to the table. So what is the topic this morning?
Dan Blocker.
Dan Blocker.
Remember Dan Blocker?
He was a Hoss on...
Hoss Cartwright.
On
Bonanza.
Yes.
For many, many years. But a lot of people don't know the story. He's born December 10th, 1928. Okay? Now then, the story goes, he's born in DeKalb, Texas. He was a son of Ora Shack Blocker and wife Mary Arizona Blocker. He weighed in at 14 pounds.
Holy smokes.
He's the biggest baby ever born in Bowie County. 14 pounds. The family moved to Old Donald, south of Lubbock, and they operated a store. Now, his background is so interesting. He attended Texas Military Institute.
Really?
As a child, yeah.
I didn't know that.
In 1946, he played football at Southern Baptist Hardin-Simmons in Abilene.
Oh.
In 47, he transferred to Saul Ross Teachers College in Alpine.
Really?
He was a star football player, graduated in 1950. Then he went to the Korean War. He went on to earn a master's degree in dramatic arts. Can you imagine?
I didn't know any of this.
Nobody thought he was intelligent. This kid was really intelligent. He was just huge. In high school, he weighed 300 pounds.
Wow.
He was a big kid.
He really was a hoss.
He was a hoss, and they called him the gentle giant.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, he went and taught, now you won't believe this, he taught English and drama in Sonora, Texas.
Really?
He taught sixth grade and coached at Eddy Elementary in Carlsbad.
Huh.
Then he became a teacher in California. He was drafted during the Korean War. He did basic training at Fort Polk, Louisiana. He served in the infantry. He was a sergeant in Company F, 179th Infantry Regiment. He served in Korea from December 51 to August 52. He received a Purple Heart for his wounds. Now, in addition to that, he received the National Defense Service Medal, the Korean Service Medal, two Bronze Campaign Stars, the Republic of Korea Presidential Star, the United Nations Service Medal, the Korean War Service Medal, and Combat Infantry Badge.
Holy cow! Wow,
I mean, this kid was so decorated, it's just unbelievable. Now, no, most people don't know. He started in the movies in 1957.
Hmm.
The first one was The Three Stooges.
Really?
Yes. He made two appearances in Gunsmoke in 56. He played in The Thoroughbreds, The Time to Die, Colt 45, The Restless Gun, Sheriff of Cochise. Do you remember that one? That was a funny one.
Wow.
The Rifleman, Beyond the Cimarron City. He made so many movies, it's just, you know, unbelievable how many he made total. And then, of course, his big break came, 1959. He was cast as Hoss Cartwright on Bonanza. He played the role in 415 episodes until his death.
Really? 415?
Yeah. And here's what he said. We shall pass this way on earth but once. If there is any kindness we can show or good act we can do, let us do it now. For we will never pass this way again.
Wow, that's heavy.
Isn't that heavy? He played in Come Blow Your Horn with Frank Sinatra. I did not remember that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. He played in The Lady in Cement.
Wow.
He was Dr. Strangelove.
Seriously?
Yes. And huh. He played in so many roles. It's just, you know, amazing. And, you know, he died in 1972.
Uh-huh.
He went in, you know, for gallbladder surgery. He had a pulmonary embolism, and that's what killed him. He was 43 years old.
Really?
Yeah. Now then, a lot of people don't know, he was part owner of the Bonanza Restaurants.
Really? I used to love Bonanza Restaurants.
Yeah. He was part of that.
Wow. I didn't know that either. It's like I don't even know Dan Blocker. I thought I knew.
You don't even know about him.
I know.
He's listed on the West Texas Walk of Fame in Lubbock.
You're serious?
Yes.
Wow.
And he also owned two sports cars. And now, I hate to admit, I thought I knew all about sports cars, but I don't. He owned a 1965 Huffaker Genie MK10 race car, nicknamed the Vinegaroon.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And, you know, usually when a show, they just write you out. But they did show a death in the show, and it only lasted one other season without him.
Really?
And it was the 14th and the final season was January 16th, 1973. Now, he was he's buried there. There's several things named after him. You know, he's in the hometown cemetery. There is a Dan Blocker room on the second floor of the O'Donnell Heritage Museum in O'Donnell, Texas.
Wow.
There's a Dan Blocker beach in Malibu. There's a Dan Blocker Avenue in the Boulder Ranch development in Henderson, Nevada.
Really?
Yes.
Huh. I'm blown away that we're talking about Haas from Bonanza. I had no idea he was even a teacher. I didn't know he was smart. Not that I thought he was stupid, but you know, I had no idea he
Everybody
was so
thought
intelligent.
He was a simple giant. I know what they thought.
Yeah.
And he wasn't. This guy is so brilliant, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
You know?
And I just did not know that he had anything to do with the Bonanza. In fact, I didn't even know that those restaurants had anything to do with anything at all related to the show or anything like that.
Yeah, and he's in the family plot there in Woodman Cemetery in DeKalb, Texas. And it's just got a plain stone, and it says R. Dan D. Blocker. Can you believe it?
Wow.
But he made so many movies.
My goodness. I'm just shocked that all this has been going on. I feel like it's been right under my nose because I think I've watched probably every episode of Bonanza probably 100 times each.
He made 13 movies during his career.
Wow. And that's the only thing I remember is Bonanza.
Yeah, but can you believe that Frank Sinatra, Come Blow Your Horn? I didn't remember him in that one.
No, me neither.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
but
amazing.
But he was in that one. Yeah, and he played in so many westerns. I mean, he played in Gunsmoke. He played. He was in Colt 45. And we just, I don't know, we didn't believe, remember all that. The Restless Gun and The Rifleman.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he always seemed like a really nice guy. You know, when I saw him, especially on Bonanza, he seemed like a really, you know, nice, kind person. Of course, you know, he's playing a role in a character, but it just seems like, okay, this is a little bit too genuine for him to be just playing a role. So he seemed like a really great guy, but my goodness, I'm blown away at how much he's done, and I don't even think we even... Of course, maybe that's part of being so good at a role and being in such a legendary show and becoming such an iconic character. Maybe, you know, it kind of outshadows everything else. But boy, I feel like we should have known all that and it should have been obvious. And to me, it just wasn't.
Well, and he was a Free Methodist. Now, I don't know what a Free Methodist is.
I don't know that
but
I
that
do
was
either.
He was a Free Methodist, whatever that is. But he was a Methodist.
Wow.
But it's back then they had a Free Methodist. I guess it was different than a regular Methodist.
Yeah. Huh.
But his life is very interesting. The things he did in the war are really superb. I've never seen anybody with that many medals.
I know it.
So he did a lot of good stuff.
I had no idea he was in the service at all. But you started listing off those awards and those medals, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. You know, this guy is, you know, I guess probably it would be safe to say that he is so underrated as a person and a person of character that you know he really I guess should have more attention on him than what he has.
Well, that's it. I mean, he was able to do so many things with his life, and look at him. When he was young, he was teaching.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, he taught in Carlsbad and California?
Yeah. Carlsbad, California, Sonora, Texas. I mean, he was very well educated. Nobody ever knew that.
Wow. Yeah, I had no idea. And it may just come down to the character that he was playing. But, you know, and back then, they didn't really do a whole lot of interviews. So you didn't really get to know the person as, you know, a person outside of the characters that they play. But, boy, I just, you know, you mentioned Dan Blocker at the beginning. And I'm like, Dan Blocker? We talking about, like, Hoss from... what are you possibly going to share? But I tell
I am
blown away at the things that he has done.
He did an awful lot in a short span of life. He had four children, by the way.
Really?
And every one of their names started with a D.
Cool. Wow.
Well, Dan Blocker. And he was married to one woman all those years.
Was he really?
Yep.
Wow, that's kind of rare, especially for, you know, a new actor back in those times, you know, because Hollywood was a strange place back then.
That's right. And it was obviously, you know, his character was just beyond compare.
Yeah. Wow.
And, and so all these people that knew him, you know, talk about he was just a gentle person, a very gentle giant. But, you know, he could ride a horse, he could do things, you know. That was just amazing. That's probably because he's from Texas.
Yeah.
That, you know, he had all those riding abilities.
Yeah, it just came natural.
It came natural. And 415 episodes.
Wow.
And I didn't realize there was that many. It was the 13th year that he died, and it was only one more year. The 14th year it went off the air.
Wow. I guess I didn't even realize that he had died while the show was still, you know, they were making
episodes. I knew that. I remember when it came on the radio and television, I was so upset, you know. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, this is terrible. Because I really liked him as an actor, and I thought he was just great on there.
Yeah, yeah. You know, now it kind of makes me want to go and explore some of his other projects and see him not as Hoss Cartwright in some of these other roles.
That's exactly right.
Wow.
Look at some of the others that he did. And I know that I don't remember The Rifleman and some of those episodes he played in.
Yeah, I don't either.
But and Come Blow Your Horn. I've seen that three times.
and now you're going to see it for a fourth.
That's right, because now I'm going to go back and see what he played on Come Blow Your Horn.
Wow, Dan Blocker. Yeah. What a great guy. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, I thought it was a great story.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, we've been talking about all the wonderful aspects of a life settlement and investing in a life insurance policy, how it's much more conservative than other opportunities to invest, especially Wall Street these days. You know, it's all up and down, and people are in a nervous wreck. Well, with a life settlement, just like anything else, there are some risks. There are three major risks that people need to know about before they get involved. So what are those risks?
Okay, the first risk is if it goes over, you have to pay the premiums. And that could be a little bit, or it could be, you know, $1,000. But usually it's very reasonable. Most of our premiums, you know, are very reasonable. So that's one risk. That's your greatest risk if it goes over. You have to wait on your money. You're still going to get it, but it would be delayed. Okay, the second risk is it's not liquid during the time it's in a policy, naturally. During that time, you have to wait till it matures to get paid every time, and everybody, I think, knows that. The third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under. If it did, it would take a little longer to get your money. We've never had a life insurance company go under in Texas. They've all got so much premium income, somebody would buy it. They always have. So, you know, you've always got that backup that they're so big that somebody would buy them. And I haven't seen but one for sale in years because people would snatch them up because of that premium income is so important. Okay.
Yeah, it's just too much to ignore.
That's
so,
right.
For people who are new to the whole concept, you know, when they come in, does it take, because it's basically just a waiting game. You invest and then wait for the policy to mature, and then you get paid, right?
Yes.
So do people, when they first come in for the first time and they're new, do they struggle with that? Do they want like an update? Do they get nervous? Do they want to know what's the status of the investment?
I had somebody the other day that had been calling about a policy that's gone over because they were new with us. And guess what? Then the policy matured and we called them. So now they don't have a reason to call every week.
So their nerves are a little bit calmer now. They know what's going on with that.
They know they're going to get paid.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It went over a little bit, so they were having a panic attack. They were calling.
Yeah.
Now we know that there's no problem. It has matured. And as soon as we get all the paperwork, they'll get paid.
How does that work as people, you know, invest in more policies? Does that calm down a little bit? Do they get used to the process?
Oh, yeah, they get comfortable. And then they start recommending us. They start putting more money in, and they're very comfortable with the way it works.
Okay, and I know with
it's
everybody,
it's that first deal that gets them nervous.
Yeah, I mean, and that's understandable because you know people are up literally in the middle of the night. You know, if they're on Wall Street at all, they're up in the middle of the night wondering if they have anything left at all. And so I can understand that anxiety of my goodness, we can actually invest, know that the principal is going to be there, know that the value is not going to go down, and we don't have to worry about it. I'm sure that takes a lot of getting used to.
It does. And they have to get comfortable. And once they're comfortable, it's just like, you know, an old shoe. It works.
Yeah.
And it's comfortable. And it works over and over again. If you've got an IRA, it works. If you've got an inherited IRA, it works. If you've got a joint account with your wife, it works. Any type of account will work.
So we've been focused on the actual investments themselves. Let's zoom out a little bit and just kind of see how the overall picture works. How does all this fit together? You know, we've been talking about, you know, individual specific types of investments. But when we zoom out, how many policies would you say is an average investor in at any given moment?
I'd say probably 8 on an average.
Okay. Some a little more, some a little less.
Yeah, some have got 20.
Oh,
but I'm just saying. The average is probably 8.
Okay. And so the way this works is that this is a plan that you put together. This is a part of a strategy for people to grow their wealth over time so that they're ready for retirement. This is not I'm going to invest in this one policy and then it's going to mature and I'm going to be set for my retirement. So how long does it normally, or how long would you recommend somebody, you know, being involved in something like this to get their wealth to where they need to be?
I'd say 7 to 10 years.
Okay.
It's not going to happen overnight. We're not going to make you rich. But we'll make you a good return and good interest on your money, and we can keep doing it for a long time.
So what about after retirement? People can keep going with the program.
Yes,
right?
They can just leave it in there and keep working it, okay?
Okay. And so when people retire and they get to that place where, okay, I don't have a regular paycheck coming in anymore, I don't have that regular income source, how do you set this up so that people can still invest yet still have money to live on and do the things they want to do?
Well, what they need to do, tell me how much you're going to need for at least 2 years. And we're going to leave that much cash in the account where you'll always have it and try to maintain that. I've got several people I maintain $90,000 a year. I've got some I have to maintain $200,000 a year.
Okay. So it just kind of depends.
So you put that money in there, and then as it works, you leave some of that interest in there, and then you invest the other interest. That's how it works.
What happens if people lose grasp with, you know, where they actually are? If they start overspending, what happens to the whole concept?
Well, we try to tell them. You know, you're getting way out there.
So
I only have a few that do that.
So you're actually keeping an eye on things to kind of make sure people are generally in the guidelines.
I check their accounts on a daily basis almost to see how much cash and how much their investments are, where we know.
So you're looking over them as like their financial guardian angel.
Yeah, we hope so.
Wow. All right. Well, I know we've kind of, you know, hit some generalities, and, you know, kind of hit the basic concept of things. But if somebody wants to come see you and they're thinking to themselves, oh, gosh, Faye, you know, this sounds really great. I really want to get involved. But, you know, I want to retire when I'm 62. And right now I'm in my upper 50s. I haven't, you know, gotten to where I need to be. Does somebody like that still have time to get started?
Absolutely.
And to be a part of the program, you have to be accredited, and that means...
You must be accredited.
So what does that mean to be accredited?
You've got to either be worth $1 million without your main house, or you have to make $200,000 a year.
Okay. And I know we focused mostly on the life settlement, but if somebody's not accredited, you have a number of other options that people can explore to invest and get ready for retirement. What are some of the other options?
Well, I think annuities are great. I'm already always having these people say, "Oh, we hear this bad thing about annuities." A fixed annuity is safe.
Okay.
This is not at a brokerage house. That's a different kind of annuity. Those annuities are not as safe as a fixed annuity because they're in mutual funds. We do not do mutual funds, so there's no mutual funds in this annuity. Okay.
Okay. So you have a
and you're
number.
Never direct in any of the market with us. It's what makes it safer.
All right. So regardless of where anybody is, there are a number of options. The point is, people need to come see you. You can get them, you know, at least started on a path. Kind of get them to understand how retirement works, how growing your wealth works, and so it really will calm people down once they understand. You know, yeah, you still have to grow your money, but yeah, it is doable. So, do you have a availability for this coming week for people to come see you?
Yes, the first availability would be 11 on Wednesday.
Okay. All right. And so for people to come make an appointment, what is the phone number they need to call?
877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. If they'll call, we'll make them an appointment.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.